There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back, listeners, to the 45th. It's been an eventful week, and I'm really happy to be back this week with my co-host, Susan Simpson. Hi, Susan. How are you?
Hi, Rabia.
And Suraj. Suraj is back. Suraj, how are you doing?
Hey, Rabia. Hey, Susan. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. I was going to say I'm good because I have been actually kind of disconnected. Okay, disconnected, not exactly, but I have not been on social media as much as I normally am. And I think I feel emotionally healthier this week.
I was just going to say that. I had not really been on Twitter for probably 2 or 3 weeks, really, not that much. And I had not seen a Trump tweet, like, in the wild in a very long time. I'd seen, like, reporting on some of them. I'd seen them mentioned, but I hadn't actually seen any myself until this morning, when that's all I saw.
Something happened this morning. And by the way, folks, we're recording on a Sunday morning, just to give you a little bit of a timestamp. And there was, like, a Twitter storm happening this morning. Did you see that, Suraj?
I did. I'm still, you know, processing all of it because there were really so many tweets. There are a lot of retweets. There was, I think the funniest one, and I know he'll probably get some flack for this, was the GIF, or GIF if you want to pronounce it as GIF. I think that's the wrong way to pronounce it.
That is the right way to pronounce it, damn it.
It's GIF. That's the only answer. It's loud.
of his incredible golf swing, in which he basically swings the club, then ball hits Hillary Clinton, and she falls into Air Force, or I think her campaign plane. And I mean, I just, like, on an editing perspective, that's just funny. I mean, I don't think he meant any harm by it. But of course, I'm sure there are going to be people who are going to say, oh, Trump wants violence against Hillary Clinton. I don't really think that's the case.
But is that ever okay to, like, show yourself using violence against a political opponent? I mean, is that ever something we would have shrugged at before?
Even as a funny thing. Yeah, I don't think it's...
I thought it was just pure comedy. I don't think it was, like, meant to be, like, something.
But he's not Letterman. Like, he's not, and even Letterman wouldn't do something like that. I mean, we're talking about the president of the United States, and I, you know, was thinking that if this is like a kid who held a position as like a student body president, I would say it's inappropriate and unpresidential for that position.
Yeah, but this is the office of the president. I mean, there's literally nothing beneath the office of the president.
Yeah, no, there is. There's a lot that's beneath the office, and he's demonstrating a lot of it. Come on. Okay, so Ross, let me tell you. If I tweeted, like, let's say you and I are on different sides of any issue, right? Not even politically, just like where, and then I tweet, I mean, you know, I've got plenty of people who are like enemies. Like they just hate me. They're not enemies, but they hate me for different reasons. And maybe I don't get along with them. And if I were to tweet something like that, people would say that's obnoxious of her.
Yeah, but we're like, talking about Donald Trump here. We're not talking about Barack Obama or George W. Bush. We're talking about Donald Trump. He was elected because of who he is, not because he's like any of the other previous presidents that have been in office during our lifetimes. Like, that's...
But that could excuse anything.
Like, but like, the, if you want to talk about presidential, I mean, of course, we could talk about, you know, the office of the, you know, Barack Obama, who... If you want to compare, like, his demeanor, okay, that's fine. Like, he has a completely different demeanor. And sure, he's not what many people say has a presidential demeanor.
So I guess it comes down to, in terms of norms, if we're looking at this as it's a Trump thing only, Trump is this unique, like, sui generis, like, one of a kind thing in American history that'll never be repeated, never be involved again. And whatever he does has no impact on the rest of our future. That could be the case. I don't feel comfortable about that. I think it's more likely that everything he's doing right now, yes, he's unique, but also the things he's doing, the traditions he's destroying, that's going to come after him. That doesn't just come back.
And in every other situation, you know, isn't a candidate supposed to, like, rise to meet the requirements of the job? Like, is the office of the presidency, which is going to withstand Trump and, you know, like, is that supposed to lower itself to meet him versus him? You know, like, in any other position, you, like, take on a job and you're like, it is what it is. I'm here. I'm not going to learn. I'm not going to change anything. That's not how things work.
He doesn't have to, and that's the thing. But, of course, like, you know, the repercussions with that is that he's getting a lot of Republican backlash, at least on Capitol Hill. And, you know, I was actually thinking about this yesterday. I was at a housewarming party And I was talking with a few friends of mine, you know, from different ends of the spectrum. And, you know, a lot of the things that people talk about with impeaching Trump, I mean, are Democrats really comfortable with a president Mike Pence? Because if you think about how popular Mike Pence is, his approval ratings are really high.
It's not about comfort at this point.
And he's real beloved. He's really beloved by congressional Republicans. And so if you want to talk about someone who's very dangerous to the Democratic cause, it's Mike Pence. You know, Donald Trump can't pass any legislation with his current relationship with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. That wouldn't be the case with Mike Pence. Mike Pence is less of a danger to the nation. Huh?
Mike Pence is less of a danger to the nation.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do. I think so. Very much. Trump is incompetent and can destroy us by accident.
No.
Pence doesn't actively want to hurt us. I mean, I think his ideas. Yeah,
I also think
but
Pence
he's not
is
trying.
Yeah, but Mike.
And I think Pence is less of a danger to like just institutions and processes, you know.
Yeah.
Then, but I get what you're saying. You have competence versus.
Right.
You know, but inability to do anything.
The thing is, like, Mike Pence is a competent leader versus Trump being not as competent, if you want to make that case.
I'd absolutely prefer a competent Republican.
But
to
you
Trump.
Realize a competent leader means basically, you know, everything that President Obama worked so hard to implement will be completely undone, as opposed to what's happening now, which is not really much has happened in terms of rolling back, you know, the ACA or even DACA. I mean, he's caving on DACA. That's
yeah. Well, look, I'd hate a President Pence. It'd be terrible for our nation, but I prefer to our current situation.
I feel like if that happens, you will sorely regret it.
My standards aren't Republicans being hurt. My standards now are, is our country going to survive?
I think our country will survive past Trump. Very much so.
I hope you're right.
I just want to have it all.
I just want to have it all. I just want a president who will not destroy the institutions and also not destroy policies that I believe in. But here's what my question to you. I'm not quite sure what unleashed the Twitter storm. I think there were like 15 tweets this morning, including retweets of that GIF, as you mentioned, but also a couple other like memes by the same weird account. But this one account called Trumpism 5.0, which shows like this freight train.
I just looked at this. Why is he pulling a barge full of Oreos?
Is it Oreos? Like one of the memes is, oh yeah, there's Oreo.
It's repatriation.
Why is the president pulling a boat of Oreos?
It's bringing trade and products and jobs.
Susan, he's bringing Oreos back to America. Maybe they're manufactured overseas.
It's repatriation. It's basically, you know, lowering government regulation here in the United States to make it more enticing for, you know, international corporations or businesses that went abroad who left the United States to come back.
What do you think happened last night? What happened last night to do this morning?
He found his phone. Kelly hid it and he finally found it.
Maybe that's what happened. I don't know. All right, let's move on then. That was it's been a really odd morning. And he even retweeted himself his last tweet.
Oh, hey, there's nothing wrong with retweeting yourself. That is perfectly normal.
See, opinions differ. I'm a strong anti-self-tweeter, except in like certain
cases. I personally don't do it, but you should be allowed to do it.
I feel like you can retweet like a comment if you think it needs more visibility. Like if something that's important to everyone to see. Other than that, no. But before we move on, I just got to say, Rocket Man.
What's Rocket Man? Oh, yeah. Okay, that one tweet.
New name for Kim Jong-un.
You know, Elton John slash Kim Jong-un. I'll read it for you. I spoke with President Moon of South Korea last night, asked him how Rocket Man is doing, long gas lines forming in North Korea. Too bad, exclamation point. So obviously,
all right, first of all,
nobody
has cars in North Korea, so there's no gas lines. That's a lie.
Sorry, Trump.
How do you know they're not long gas lines in North Korea?
For what? To fuel what, Siraj? They don't have cars.
They got cars there.
Very few people have cars. The 30 people have cars probably have enough gas, but come on. Okay, what did you you think that was okay, Rocket Man? Now
that's pretty cool. It's too cool a nickname. Like, if it's your biggest enemy, why are you calling him Rocket Man? It's like kind of.
It's an endearing name.
Yeah.
Susan, you and I, we both got lucky that this fantastic sponsor offered us gift cards where we could do a little bit of shopping. Have you done your ModCloth shopping?
I've not chosen yet, but there's so much to choose from.
A huge selection. So ModCloth believes that fashion's for everybody, size, and shape. And that's what I really love about this, because I can sometimes go large, sometimes extra large, rarely 1X, but sometimes it happens depending on the cut of an outfit. And they actually carry sizes from extra, extra small all the way to 4X. They've got a great selection. And I actually got my first shipment.
What'd you get?
I got some great stuff. I got a pair of beautiful blue leather booties. I got these really sparkly gold.
Wait, blue leather booties? I want to see these.
They're beautiful. There's like these rich indigo booties or leather. I'm going to be wearing them this entire fall. I'm so excited. They're very comfortable. And I actually got them with something that I think are going to look great. It's like this chiffon dark blue duster, a long duster. Very classy. They'll look great together. I got this silky polka dot tunic top, which is really cute. That'll look great with some jeans and boots. And then finally, I'm most excited about this purchase, is I got their glittery gold heels. Now, I might not get to wear them a lot, but they're adorable. So I love. And I got them really quickly, like when just a matter of days after placing my order. Their stuff is beautiful. They've got incredible assortment and style of clothing. And what our listeners can do is go to modcloth.com. If you enter your promo code 45th at checkout, you're going to get 30% off your order of $100 or more. And it's a great deal. And by the way, their stuff is really affordable too. It's not just that it's cute, it's very affordable. So for that $100, you're going to get a whole lot of stuff. So whatever the season, ModCloth's got you covered. If you need a little bit of outfit advice, guess what? They even have an amazing team of mod stylists, which, hey, Susan, if you can't decide, maybe they can help you out.
I think I need that.
Yeah, so go to modcloth.com, enter promo code 45th at checkout, and get 30% off your order of $100 or more. Snag your next style obsession at ModCloth. Well, yeah. I know Siraj wanted to talk about some positive news coming out of the White House. So I was planning to start with that, but the tweets derailed us. So I'm going to let you tell us what happened.
Sure. I just wanted to highlight, you know, this 11-year-old from Falls Church, from Virginia, Frank Giaccio, got his wish to mow the lawn of the White House for free. So President Trump came out to personally thank him and gave him a tour of the White House. But what really got me was that when Trump came out to greet him, Frank, or as he's known, his nickname FX, just kept mowing the lawn like was completely in the zone. And I think Trump like went to go high five him initially or shake his hand, and he just like kept mowing. And I was like, man, this kid's got hustle. So you know, that was a good story. That was a good story. I think it, like after like a like 10 seconds, he's like, oh, it's the president. I should probably though. Shake his hand. So that's what happened.
You know what would be great is if, like, basically Trump was like, just come do it every week for us, please. Save us some money.
Although, you know, it's probably already, you know, in the budget. So it's just wasted tax money at this point. Might as well pay the kid.
Yeah, well, Trump could have him go do some landscaping in Mar-a-Lago or something else. I'm sure that that poor child is available for all kinds of free labor. No, that was cute. It was cute. That's all I have to say.
Good story.
It's probably the most normal thing Trump's done in like
we need good stories
a long,
like that.
Long time.
All right. So here's a few stories that caught my eye this week. I want to start off with this. Apparently, there's a California Republican. We've talked about him before, named Dana Rohrabacher. And this past week, he told John Kelly, he spoke to him over the phone. He told him that he had spoken to Assange. Now, we know about him because we spoke about him earlier, because he had met with Julian Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy in London. And so they've been in communication. But this week, Rohrabacher told Kelly that he offered Assange a pardon, or quote, something like that, in exchange for evidence that Russia didn't give WikiLeaks the hacked DNC emails, because that's apparently what we're assuming happened. And that's what it seems like happened, given, like, you know, what's been reported, at least. And so Assange told Rohrabacher that he can prove that these leaked DNC documents that he published himself during the election, they actually didn't come from Russian sources, and he promised additional help and blah, blah, blah. Now, Rohrabacher has a bit of a reputation for being a Russophile. He's pretty friendly to Russia.
Yeah. Don't forget what Congressman McCarthy, I think, said in the recorded call last year on the line with Ryan and all them. There's two people I think Putin pays, Rohrabacher and Trump.
That's right. So this is interesting. Why do you think Rohrabacher is so committed to this effort? I mean, he wants to get Assange a pardon based on showing that the Russia had nothing to do with these leaks. I mean, he really seems very, like, he really wants to help Russia out here.
I do not understand that one at all. He is so transparently pro-Russia. He doesn't hide it. He's not, you know, trying to, like, disguise his motivations here. He is openly pro-Russia at every turn. Yeah, there's a story there. I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, it's hard for me to speculate on something like this. I know Rohrabacher, he was, I want to say, back after Trump won the election, before he was inaugurated, Rohrabacher was kind of in the mix for being the Secretary of State. And he was in the like round of candidates along with like John Bolton, even what's her name? Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman from Hawaii. Yeah, Rohrabacher is kind of a mixed bag because, you know, I think he's looking to exonerate Russia in any way he can to kind of legitimize Trump's victory. And it doesn't come off that well on his part because if the reports are true that he's trying to offer Assange a pardon, like it's seems like he's trying more to prove that he's right and Trump's right rather than letting things happen the way they are.
He's been pro-Russia forever, though. This is like way before Trump. Maybe even a decade back, he was pro-Russia in a way that.
In what way was he pro-Russia,
in.
Though? Because
he's always been. He's like.
No, but explain to me, what does pro-Russia mean?
It's basically has a really, really consistent pattern of whenever Russia starts incursions to other countries, he blames other country. It's like, oh, Ukraine attacked Russia. Oh, Georgia attacked Russia.
He gives them more the benefit of the doubt.
He claims that like Georgia like started violence against Russia. He's also the one who said like if Alaska wanted to join Russia, he'd say okay.
Oh, that's mighty generous of him. Well, I thought that was interesting, and I thought maybe it has something to do with the intensifying investigations in Russia. I don't know whether it would matter at this point. And I wonder what kind of evidence. I mean, I guess the evidence would have to be that you show that someone else provided it. Like, what else can the evidence be, right? Like, that Russia didn't provide it. You can't really prove a non-thing unless you prove something else happened.
In other words, never ever give something to WikiLeaks. They do not protect their sources.
Yeah, I mean, look at Chelsea Manning. Look at Snowden. Yeah,
as if we need more evidence of that.
True.
All right, so we're going to move on quickly. Something happened with ESPN. I'm calling it ESPN Gate. And I'm wondering, Siraj, if you could fill us in on what happened. We can talk about that.
Yeah, No, I can help because I've reported on this kind of extensively this past week. You know, ESPN SportsCenter host Jemele Hill, an African-American woman, and she's been very outspoken in recent months about politics. And she co-hosts a show, SC6, or as they call The Six. It's the 6 p.m. SportsCenter edition. And basically, she was posting an article about Kid Rock, focusing on his potential Senate run in Michigan, and she called him a racist. It's interesting, just a side note, he has a half-black son, so...
I don't know if that's that's necessarily evidence you're not racist. I'm not saying he is, but I don't know if that counts as evidence.
I mean, people will call me racist, or probably, but like my dad is like... you know, 8 shades darker than me. I mean, it's that kind of thing. Like you were raised in a biracial household. That's, you know, I don't think that he could be racist against some people, but I wouldn't say he's like racist against black people. Anyways, getting back to the story, Jemele Hill, she called Donald Trump and in the comments to this tweet, she called Donald Trump a white supremacist and a bigot and like the most, you know, most unqualified, like most dangerous, uninformed president of her lifetime. And ESPN issued a statement disavowing her comments, saying that doesn't reflect the rest of the company. You know, Jemele Hill then came out saying that her only regret is that, you know, she didn't apologize for the comments. And, you know, I don't think she should have to. She basically said, my only regret is that people may have thought that this, you know, reflects poorly on the company. And then, of course, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders came out and said that her comments were a fireable offense, and put that in quotes, fireable offense, because that's what she actually said. And then Donald Trump on Friday morning tweeted out that ESPN and Jemele Hill should apologize for the, quote, untruth. Now, I have no problem with what a private company does with their employees, whether they, you know, fire them for conduct they deem unfit for their office. I do have a problem, obviously, with the federal government or state or local government, the White House in particular, weighing in on what a private company should do in terms of personnel, staffing, and
especially on matters of like opinions about the president.
Right. And, you know, I don't think anyone should be punished for a criticism of the president because it's well protected within the First Amendment and the freedom of speech. However, the flip side of that is that ESPN fired Curt Schilling for posting a meme on his Facebook or that was critical of the transgender bathroom policy. And this was back, I want to say 2014, 2015. I think it was 2015, actually. And so Kurt Schilling, he's a well-known conservative.
I don't recall this, actually. I don't remember.
Yeah, well, I mean, it happened like 2 years ago, and I think when the issue was pretty hot. And, you know, ESPN, they have an issue on their own in terms of how they treat, you know, liberal versus conservative perspectives. And they've been leaning more to the left than to the right. And, you know, if ESPN wants to be consistent, they fired Jemele Hill in terms of conduct they feel is unfit and shouldn't, you know, exemplify their company. But it's already too late. They're pretty much keeping her on. However, there was one report from Think Progress. This is the, you know, the Center for American Progress, the liberal think tank that was founded by John Podesta, who's the former Clinton chief of staff. They basically, ESPN, there was a report that ESPN had tried to take Jemele Hill off the air, but her co-host Michael Smith would not basically do the show without, he would not do the show without her. And then all their backups, they had two backups, both of whom are African-American as well. They refused to do it as well. So the only way they could have gotten out of it was either to let Jemele Hill and Michael Smith get back on the air or go with two white hosts. And
It would not have looked good at all.
So yeah, that's basically the rundown of what happened with ESPN Gate. And I do not think ESPN will fire Jemele Hill. But yeah.
After the comments from the White House, they can't, I think. I mean, it's their policies to enforce, but once the White House weighs in that way, you can't be seen as letting Trump dictate your staff.
I mean, the only thing that would like make Jemele Hill lose her job, I mean, they just signed a pretty a multi-year contract. I can only imagine that they just won't re-sign her after this because she probably brings too much negative PR to the company. I mean, here's the thing. In the last year, they've lost so much in their viewership. Like, I want to say they had the lowest viewership in 2016 in like the previous 15 years. And they had to lay off, you know, hundreds of employees, particularly talent, like good writers, good reporters. And they kept a lot of people who were just kind of, you know, opinionated commentators who don't really add anything to the conversation. And I know it's sports and it's like, it's not something that is like, you know, the most significant thing that's going on. But for ESPN, they're kind of doubling down on their liberal bias in some ways. And that's kind of where they're losing a lot of viewers because most of their viewers are basically middle-aged white conservative men who watch sports. Yeah. And they don't even want to watch sports on their network anymore because they don't want to give them the ratings.
All right. Well, you know, look, Suraj, we spent a lot of time right now talking about what ESPN has done, not done, you know, like whether they should have, what they should do and like, you know, how. But my focus here, what I'm concerned about is the White House, how they reacted to this. That anybody in the administration would think it's okay to put public pressure on a company to get anybody fired. That to me is like, that's like an abuse of power. So I'm more concerned. I don't care if ESPN tanks. I don't care if their rating sucks. I don't care if they, you know, that's a private company. That's not my concern. Mike, I'm more concerned about like, so what are your thoughts on that issue? Do you think that was inappropriate?
Right. No, I do think it was inappropriate. And I kind of just glossed over it real quick. I do have a problem with the White House putting pressure on ESPN to fire an employee. I think that's wholly inappropriate because the federal government has no business in dictating what a private company should do, unless, of course, there's a monopoly on that company and they want to, you know, bring in antitrust laws to basically break it up. But ESPN is not a monopoly, so because they have competitors like Fox Sports and the like. But anyways, I think it's a poor reflection on the White House, a poor reflection on the president to react in this way because it just shows that he can't take criticism. And it shows that, you know, it kind of proves the point of a lot of people who think he just has such thin skin. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now.
Do you have any concerns about in the future this being a more acceptable or more common occurrence where the president reacts to criticism? Not by president, I mean, not just Trump, any president reacts to criticism by suggesting that person be fired or otherwise have consequences in their private lives.
If the president responds to criticism in a way that's like, you know, what is it that Barack Obama said about like, you know, something like a clown show or malarkey, like kind of responding to Donald Trump's criticism of him. You know, that's as far as it went. I don't think it actually hurt Donald Trump in the long run because he's obviously president now. But this may be as low as it gets in terms of the government trying to intrude on a private company's personnel matters.
Well, hold on a second. I don't know if that's the case because I want to talk about another story that's related to this. I think it's completely the same pattern of behavior. It's not exactly, and it's maybe under the radar of a lot of people. They might've missed the story. The ESPN stuff was all over the news. This might not have made the news for a lot of people. And that is what happened recently at a congressional hearing last week for the U.S. Institute of Peace. USIP is, how do I describe this? It's like quasi-governmental agency. It's not really a government agency, but it is, like I said, quasi. It's got some federal funding, but also has like other kinds of like foundation support. And what they do is peace building. That is exactly what it, you know, what it sounds like, U.S. Institute of Peace. They do, and I did a fellowship with them last year, so I'm familiar with their work. Last week, what happened was the federal, they were already slated. Like, you know, Trump had said that he wanted to withdraw their funding this year. But this is something that came up during the congressional hearing. A GOP congressman brought a clip out from one of the most senior executives at USIP. Her name is Manal Omar. She's a former colleague. She's fantastic. She is a veteran peacemaker, international peacemaker. She works in conflict areas all around the world. She's done it for decades to build peace. And she does it now on behalf of the United States for the last 10 years at USIP. He found a clip of her from about a year, year and a half ago before Trump was president, in which she was at on some panel. And she said something about people were asking what she thought of Donald Trump, because they said to her, hey, you travel the world, you know, trying to like help people pull back on incitement, on like, you know, like prevent violence, teaching dialogue techniques, things of that sort. How do you feel about the rhetoric coming out of this campaign? And her response was that she couldn't think of any excuse for this type of hate speech. I'm a fan of the difficult conversation, but what Trump is doing is inciting violence. Make no mistake of it, he has blood on his hands. Now, she now says that she regrets saying that last part, but she does believe that if she travels internationally calling out speech that can lead to violence, she believes she should be able to do it here at home. So this congressman last week pulled that clip of Manal Omar, executive, senior executive at USIP, played it and said, because of this reason, not only for this woman to be fired, but USIP shouldn't get funding. $32 million would be taken from an entire agency. I think that's a really big deal.
I hadn't heard this at all. I missed the story.
I read about it last night, and I didn't know if it was going to be on the podcast, to be honest with you, but
I just kind of thought about it now because I realized it's kind of the same.
Yeah, I mean, I've done reporting. I reported on events at USIP in my previous job when I was working as a for a small media startup that no longer exists called GVH Live. Yeah, I've met Manal Omar. She's great. I do, you know, it obviously it's problematic that she had to resign for basically talking about the Trump campaign.
She did, right. She resigned. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she wasn't fired. I don't know if she was forced to resign. I mean, in the USIP, I know they actually said they couldn't comment on the matter in terms of personnel because it's they claim that it's private. But yes, it is. And this is a Congress member, a congressional member of the federal government saying this person should be fired and that we should. Did he actually say that she should be fired, or is it just basically saying that we should withdraw funding from the USIP?
Does it matter?
Well, it does matter because it's one thing if he said we should withdraw funding from a nonpartisan organization because they're being openly partisan because that violates their 501c3 versus this person should be fired for using her First Amendment rights to speak against, you know, a presidential candidate. And that's using that as a means to withdraw funding. And I know he probably went with the former instead of the latter because obviously it looked even worse for USIP to kind of cave to that and say, hey, we think you should step down from your role and take something up. You know, either way, it's problematic. I don't think it's a good thing. You should be allowed to say whatever you want, whether you represent that organization that you're a part of or not. But yeah, you know, I'm not going to say it's all on the government's fault. You know, Manal should probably not have said that he has blood on his hands. I think she probably could have gone with a little bit more diplomatic language. But of course, that's, you know, hindsight's 20/20.
Well, you know what's interesting about what you just said was you said that if it's a nonpartisan institute and there's partisan speech, Susan, did you think that was partisan speech, what she said?
In hindsight, by definition, it's partisan. It's, I guess, not by definition. He's the president. So I think saying something like that is, no, it's not part of that. That's the problem. That's where we are now. Well, is it partisan if you're just making an actual comment that this guy is inciting violence in his speech? Is that, how is that
partisan? In this day and age, that's absolutely
because
partisan.
Because contextual.
So we're not even allowed to comment on someone who is making, at a rally saying, throw him out.
That's not inciting violence. That's simply trying to get someone.
Okay. Whether or not it is, but the comment itself, I don't think. Just because a Republican says it doesn't make it partisan.
Right, exactly. And what she's saying is that she didn't talk about his policies, right? She's saying as a matter of principle, given her line of work, she is not comfortable with speech that she finds. And this is somebody who's an expert. So she has red flags go up when she sees this kind of speech in other conflict areas, right? She can recognize these are signs that a society is moving towards violence. We see this over and over in conflict areas. We see this before a genocide happens. We see it before ethnic cleansing happens. You have leadership that will dehumanize the other party, things that happen. So she's an expert in this. And I think if Hillary Clinton was saying the same thing, I think Manal would have probably said she also shouldn't say these things because she was specifically asked, you talk about this stuff internationally, but what about right at home? So I personally don't think it was actually partisan speech, but I want to call to the attention again, I think it's an abuse of power to say that we funding should be taken away from an entire institute because of one person's comments during a time that was not even, it was an election. Susan, I was kind of excited to see that one of our sponsors this week is Kind. And I want to welcome Kind as a sponsor to our program because I love Kind bars. You know what a Kind bar is, right?
I do not.
Susan.
I'm out of the loop. What is a Kind bar?
All right. I'll tell you this. And I'm not lying. I can share evidence. At any given time in my house, we have at least 100 Kind bars in this house. Kind bars, they're all over. You find them everywhere. Local grocery stores, coffee shops, gyms. They are, these little healthy snacks, and they're made into a bar. They're chock full of delicious nuts and raisins, and they're high protein. They're great for when you're working out. And you can actually, and I was going to tell our listeners now that Kind is a fantastic sponsor of ours. Our listeners can get to try 10 different Kind bars for free. But first, Susan, I need you to do this. So what you have to do is you go to kindsnacks.com/45th. You sign up for a sample box and you also get to try Kind Snack Club. And you get your first 10 different kinds of bars for free. You pay for shipping. But if you sign up for the club, you're going to receive monthly snacks at a discount price and get members only bonuses, which is also great because I buy all my Kind bars at retail and I'm no longer going to do that. I'm going to have 200 Kind bars in my house going forward at all times.
I just went online and did it.
Did you just do it?
Yep.
That was good. That was quick. All right. Well, I hope our listeners get to sign up. Kind snacks are made in the U.S. They're made with ingredients you can recognize, pronounce. They're high quality, very, very nutrient dense. By the way, my daughters love them. My 8-year-old and my college age. And when we don't have time for breakfast, we'll grab and go. So they're just great, great snacks. So again, I'm telling our listeners, please go sign up for your free sample box. Here's some of the flavors. Just a few of the flavors you're going to get. You're going to get dark chocolate, nuts and sea salt, almond and coconut, peanut butter breakfast bar, dark chocolate chunk. And that's just a few of the 10 different samples you're going to get.
You left out the best flavor, though.
What was the best flavor?
Pineapple, banana, kale, spinach.
You know what? That actually sounds good to me.
Yeah, actually, they have a mango apple chia, and I kind of want that one.
That actually sounds really good, too. I'm looking all these, and I haven't had breakfast, so they all look really good. But honestly, oh my God, they have a roasted jalapeno almond bar. Are you kidding me? I've never tried that flavor. I'm signing up, and I'm having everybody I know sign up and then giving me their boxes. Visit kindsnacks.com/45th, get your free sample box, and thank you so much, Kind, for being a sponsor this week. I want to move on quickly because this accusation of abuse of power is made this week when Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who is the White House press secretary, declared from the podium that FBI Director James Comey may have, quote, violated federal law in sharing memos documenting his conversations and urging, I think more than once, that maybe he should be investigated or charged with some kind of crime. You guys know about this?
Yes. I think in a normal administration, it's all we'd be talking about.
Right. So you want to talk about why this is problematic, Susan?
Well, back up a bit. I think it was twice, actually, that Sanders did this. Is that right?
Yeah, it was more than once. I think it was twice.
Wait, this is who should be charged with a crime? It's
Comey.
Comey? Okay, yeah. For what? It was lying under oath?
No, I think it was kind of unclear. My takeaway was that it was about the fact that he talked about his memos about Trump.
This is what she said. She said, quote, the memos that Comey leaked were created on an FBI computer while he was the director. He claims they were private property, but they clearly followed the protocol of an official FBI document. Leaking FBI memos on a sensitive case, regardless of classification, violates federal laws, including the Privacy Act, standard FBI employment agreement, and non-disclosure agreements that all personnel must sign. I think that's pretty clean and clear that that would be a violation. And that the Department of Justice has to look into whether something's illegal or not.
Like, first of all, okay, forget it's Comey, forget Russia, forget all of that. The White House should never be advocating that an individual be prosecuted. The DOJ is not its, like, attack dog. That is horrific in itself. Like, forget all the extra layer of horribleness. That should be a firm line that we do not go down. And I think that is an example of something that's going to, in the future, going to haunt us. We now have an established norm where the president can direct the DOJ to go look at someone to prosecute them.
Well, technically he does, because the DOJ is...
But they don't, that's not how they operate.
Well, you can also, on the flip side, say that you can make the argument that Barack Obama didn't want the DOJ, James Comey, and Loretta Lynch to go after Hillary Clinton for her emails.
But did he publicly make, okay, so even he can say.
He didn't, I don't think he publicly.
You can surmise, he may have felt that way. I'm not saying he did, but like, okay, fine. You could say, I think probably Obama felt this way. But he never publicly announced it or even gave any indication overtly that's what he felt, if he did feel that way. And that's a reason. I mean, the president, you can have as a human being feelings about how the DOJ should operate, but the president cannot be directing the DOJ to take specific actions to prosecute or not prosecute. That's not allowed in our system.
I mean, I don't know. It seems like the balance of powers have completely shifted in a way that, you know, the president is not getting enough flack because there's obviously so many other things that he's getting flack for. So this is this happens to just be one of the areas that, you know, he can get away with. And if that's the case, you know, I have no doubt that the president in years past, I mean, before Trump, they have issued directives to the Department of Justice to prosecute individuals that they feel are, you know, political enemies or, you know, I mean, you can look at the IRS, the whole Dolores Lerner.
And they would have been killed if they'd actually made it public.
I mean, like it's, I mean, you can also make the argument that, what was it, Dolores Lerner who was the IRS administrator, basically going after conservative groups and taxing them even more, or basically auditing them, I should say. That was motivated by politics and not motivated by, you know, what people should actually be audited for, which are, you know, for many people, it's outliers in their tax forms.
Yeah, but that's bad. That's not.
I know. I'm just saying that it's happened in the past. And I'm saying, again, nothing is beneath the office of the president. I don't think that there is anything that Trump can do at this point to be impeached unless there is political will. And right now there's only like lukewarm political will, and I don't even think that's enough to get them.
Yeah. And I guess I just find this one more concerning because I do see it as a very likely area that will be abused later on, because clearly presidents will have motivation to do so, and now they have the cover to do it.
On the same day Sanders said this, you know, Trump's attorney, Jay Sekulow, also tweeted, quote, will the Department of Justice prosecute fired FBI Director James Comey? So, I mean, like, this is, and then he said, we will discuss on Jay Live. I don't know what that is. Like, it must be one of his shows or something like that. But anyway.
Oh my God. Can the president's attorneys be any stupider? Like, it's frustrating to watch what's going on there. Like, are you kidding me? Why could you not find, you're the president, why can't you find a single smart, normal attorney?
Well, he needs a lawyer that I think he can relate to. So it makes sense to me. we're going to move on now to talk about two other stories quickly before we get to, I think, like the big, big story this week, which Siraj is going to lead us on. But this to me, I thought was really big news and really happy, hopeful news. And that is this, that the California State Assembly this last week passed a bill that would require all presidential candidates to release their tax returns prior to being placed on the state's ballot. It's called the Presidential Tax Transparency and Accountability Act. And it would require that before you can be on the California ballot, you have to release your tax returns. So the state senator who introduced the bill, Scott Wiener, he was the author of the bill. So the bill is about giving the American people the honesty and transparency they deserve. And in New York, a lawmaker also introduced a similar bill, although it has not passed. But California has passed this now. What does that mean for 2020?
I mean, Trump is going to lose California either way. So if he was going to run in California, if he would put his name on the ballot, it wouldn't matter. I mean, if anything, if they got rid of the Electoral College and it was purely based on the popular vote, then yeah, he would put his name on the ballot and he would have to release his tax returns. But, you know, I don't think that this is going to mean anything. Of course, I like more transparency. I would like it, obviously, if every presidential candidate was out in the open and what they their business dealings were and how they got income and how they spent their money. Well, they don't have to reveal how they spent their money. But unless like a state like Florida or Ohio or, you know, one of those swing states introduces a bill like that and gets it passed, then it actually has any bearing on 2020. But until then, if it's only blue states that are doing it, it's not going to mean anything for Trump.
Still, I think it will definitely add to the conversation if they realize their president cannot run for president in California because he's not going to show where his money comes from. I mean, given everything else, that won't stick either, but it would be a pretty blatant show of how unwilling he is to reveal where his money comes from.
You know, unless Trump gets primaried and he ends up having to, you know, run a primary campaign in 2020 and in California where there are probably a lot of delegates. Yeah, that would be the only thing that I could think of that he would actually have to.
You think that's a possibility? You think that's a possibility?
Yeah.
Him getting primaried? No.
Really?
I mean, Kasich has talked about it. I don't think he has the groundswell of support to run an effective primary challenge. I do think that he probably would run an independent campaign simply because he's so fed up with Trump. And I think he could probably draw away enough votes from Trump in the general election to probably get a Democrat elected.
Did you know that in his books, Trump vowed he would, if he was ever president, he'd never run for second term?
Which book was
in
that?
In what book? In what year?
Like in the 2000s.
Yeah, I mean,
even like 2011 or 2013.
I actually was making that prediction that Trump would get so fed up with the job that he would not run for re-election because he just would hate it so much.
Isn't he still raising money though for the next run? He still campaigns. Yeah. Okay.
But it's also going to attorney's fees, so maybe it's really just the cover to pay for the lawyers. So have you guys been following the latest Facebook news?
Sort of. Tell us a little bit more.
What we have. So this has kind of been a slow bubbling thing. In that, if you go back to the election, you remember, like 3 days after Zuckerberg, who, God willing, will not be running for president.
yeah, that would be horrible.
Oh, my God. It's like the worst dystopian future I can imagine for America. Like, Trump versus Zuckerberg. He said, of course, the Facebook didn't sway the election. Which, given that before the election, he was, you know, his company was bragging about how they could be influencing voters. Seems a bit contradictory. But anyway, moving along, we now have various Russia investigators looking into what's going on Facebook. And it turns out that starting back in 2015, Russia was making purchases on Facebook to influence the election and basically stoke divisions and, you know, start all those crazy racist Facebook forwards that your older relatives sometimes put on Facebook. And what's big about this is it's not just that. It's also that Mueller got a warrant even for the Facebook ads, which suggests that I guess the most likely violation people are speculating is that there was campaign finance violations going on and that it's not lawful for foreign nations, for foreign citizens to, you know, use money to influence American elections. And so it appeared that's what was going on. Facebook was allowing Russia to buy political ads, which is a big deal because if Trump or Trump's campaign knew about it and they were cooperating with that, that's aiding and abetting.
You mean Facebook aiding and abetting the Russians?
No, if Trump was working with that, that's still speculation. But it goes back to the whole Cambridge Analytica thing, which I have really wanted to dismiss as a bunch of snake oil for a long time now. And I still think it probably is.
Can you remind us of what that
is? Cambridge Analytica is the Trump team's like if this was like a comic book, that would be like the villains like supergroup, like their evil plan for like brainwashing the citizens or something. Basically, it's this like data analytics group that's supposed to be able to like efficiently use voter information to target and like micro target voters and change opinions. And I have been skeptical that it's because there's been a lot of talk about like, oh my God, Cambridge Analytica, like it's way the election. It was really good. From what I've seen, I don't think it's capable of that. It doesn't look like it looks like a scam in some ways.
Cambridge Analytica looks like
a
scam. Okay.
I don't think it's capable of doing the kind of things people are afraid it's doing. On the other hand, the involvement of Mueller here makes me wonder if maybe they were more efficient than I want to give them credit for.
What do you think this means for Facebook? There's no criminality here, is there?
I do not know campaign finance laws enough to have an opinion on that. I think it means bad things for Facebook. I think if there's any silver lining here, it means Zuckerberg's chances are gone if they ever existed. He can stop his tour of like swing states and early election states like he was making earlier. No more trips to Iowa to waltz through cornfields.
I don't think this has any bearing on campaign finance laws. I don't think Facebook will be under the radar in terms of what the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, does, because they're not running a campaign. They're not. They, as a company, never advocated for a presidential candidate. They, if you want to look at Facebook, they're basically the TV and all the ads coming on it for, you know, could be bought out by anybody, including the Russians. And in a like a comparison, like, would you punish all like Verizon Fios or like Comcast for basically, you know, taking ad money for the Russians and posting these ads? I mean, and we kind of get into like the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission.
This is a really complicated
area. It's a very like wonky subject, but, you know, I don't think Facebook, if you want to like talk about how Facebook conducts their business now, and how they're trying to basically target fake news and, you know, basically crack down on it, you know, that gives them a lot of responsibility in what they deem fake news, because if they, a lot of people have been accusing them of being pretty much liberal and very anti-conservative. And, you know, they had that, those allegations last year that they were, they had like, they were pushing down conservative news and that it wasn't showing up in people's timelines because they were messing with the algorithms. If you want to talk about that, then the federal government probably has a license to use antitrust laws to break up Facebook, or they break up Google, or they break up Twitter. I don't think that's going to happen, but that certainly would be the motivation for the government to step in and crack down on groups like Facebook, Google, or Twitter.
But here's why these ads are a big deal. I mean, one, it's completely untransparent. Like, if it's on, if it's on the radio, it's in the news, you're gonna, people are gonna know about it. The way it happens on Facebook, no one except the targeted people see it. So there's no one there to fact check it. You can lie all you want. You can say the most stupid, crazy things. And there is absolutely zero pushback in the ecosystem saying, actually, the candidate or the candidate supporters are lying to you. That's blatantly untrue. The fact that it's in private sort of breaks down any chance at dialogue or actually combating the sort of crazy campaign claims that were being made on Facebook.
Well, and you know, that's where the slippery slope comes, because what exactly are you, for like news organizations, most of them are verified. And then you have accounts that are run by, say, third parties that are completely, you know, have nothing to do with news. They might, their only mission is to push fake news. How do you root that out? And
but
how do you make sure you don't,
how
do you make sure you don't silence speech on a platform like Facebook?
Oh, it's very hard. This is not an issue we're going to solve overnight. I think it's going to be a big issue in our future elections and future of our democracy. Like a really complicated, thorny question we'll be debating 20 years from now.
It's also kind of an indictment on our society that we rely so, you know, most of our politics and how we form our opinions are based on Facebook and Twitter and social media, rather than just getting out and listening to the candidates directly, or, you know, reading news publications to better form our opinions, or even just reading books. You know, we're relying on social media, and that's, I mean, that's...
I'm not disagreeing with that, but I think there's a unique trouble here. This is not like the same issue as with like Breitbart or like partisan news organizations. This is the fact that there is no one but the viewer who gets to see what they're seeing. So there is like, if it, you know, you can have like Breitbart writing some stupid, like Obama is secretly a demon. Wait, that was like InfoWars. That can happen. And that's like, what? Okay, well, that's weird. But everyone in the world can see that and like focus like attention on that. And so people who are watching that, I mean, some are still going to believe it, but some will hear like, guys, chill out a bit there and listen to that. In this case, there's no one ever to push back because no one knows what's being said to them in the first place.
Yeah.
Another great sponsor this week is Indochino. And Indochino is a company that makes it really easy for men to get a perfectly tailored suit at an incredible price. And I know, Susan, your husband and my husband were both scheduled to go get their fittings at Indochino. Did your hubby get a chance to go?
Not yet. Looking forward to it.
Well, he has something to look forward to. My husband did go. He went out to the Tysons area in Virginia, Indochino location. They spent a lot of time. They, you know, took incredible measurements of like, he said they almost like 30, 40 minutes. So, you know, they were very precise, took all his measurements, not just for a shirt. He was going to go for a shirt. But after being there for a while, he's like, you know what? I want a suit too. And so the way it works is this. Indochino, you go there, you go to their showroom, you can even shop online, but you pick your fabric. They have customizations, you know, lapels and pleats and jacket linings and all the kinds of stuff that, you know, makes a beautifully tailored suit or pants or shirt. Speaking of which, does your husband own a personally tailored suit at all?
No, he owns a suit we went and got for a wedding, so we needed it then.
So your husband owns one suit?
Right now, yes.
My husband owns a number of suits. None of them, honestly, are fit well. And there is something about a man in a well-fitted suit. So I'm excited to wait for when he gets his suit. Our listeners actually are going to get 50% off of the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit, which I think is an incredible deal.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
Yeah. So our listeners can get this week any premium Endotino suit, any one, for just $379. And for anybody who's bought a men's suit, that is a bargain. I mean, and a tailored suit according to your measurements and customized to the fabric and everything you want. This is how you do it. You go to Indochino.com and you enter 45th at checkout. You get free shipping. You get 50% off the regular price. And so I hope your husband gets around to it soon. And then once our hubbies get their suits, they can compare. Once again, that's Indochino.com, IndoChino.com. And the promo code is 45th for any premium suit for just $379 and free shipping. And honestly, I know a bunch of guys who could use this deal, so I want to pass this on to them too. So thanks, Indochino, for sponsoring us this week. We're now going to wrap up with what I thought was really the biggest news story this week. Siraj and I both wanted to talk about it, and I thought it was interesting. I titled it The Mother of All Pivots, and Siraj has titled it Trump's Betrayal. So, Siraj, I'm going to turn it over to you to tell us.
Okay. All so, about it. You know, so Donald Trump, ever since he announced he was running for president in June of 2015, he immediately caught flack for his stance on immigration. And he actually gained a swath of support from unlikely Republican voters, people who never typically voted for a Republican. So he's getting independents, Democrats and Republicans to support him because of his stance on immigration. And then obviously it was, you know, being tough on, you know, building a border wall, you know, deporting illegal immigrants, you know, setting up things like E-Verify, which, you know, allow businesses to verify the, you know, immigration status of their potential employees or their current employees. So what happened in the last week with President Trump working with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, the Senate minority and House minority leaders, respectively, was that, you know, Trump is willing to work on DACA rather than completely, you know, letting it expire and protecting the dreamers who are already here, the 800,000 people who were brought in here, whose parents came here illegally, and they're now like in their 20s and 30s at this point. A lot of his supporters were looking for them to all get deported back to their home countries. It looks like this may not actually happen. And people on the right, his base, are complete. You know, a lot of them are very disappointed by this move. And Breitbart is even called him Amnesty Don. You know, I actually have a really good friend, you know, contributor for Red Alert Politics, with the publication I'm the assistant editor for. He burned his Make America Great Again hat this past week. And he's just like, you know, F him. Like, he's, you know, I can't stand him. You know, you have people like Ann Coulter, who is probably, and my friend, he's been a Trump supporter since day one. Ann Coulter, another Trump supporter since day one. You know, she got laughed at on Bill Maher for saying that Trump had the most, but, you know, back in 2015, that Trump was the most likely to win the presidency. She went on Twitter and said, at this point, who doesn't want Trump impeached? And then you have people like Sean Hannity calling Trump's read my lips, no new taxes moment, you know, kind of harkening back to President George H.W. Bush, who said, read my lips, no new taxes. And then he raised taxes. This is very typical of politicians to do. I will say this, though, and this is something that I don't know if the Trump base really gets, is that in Washington, you know, if you're going to get deals done, a lot of times you have to concede on the things that you want the most, and that this is the kind of thing that we're seeing right now. I'm not saying that this is actually set in stone, because it's not, but it's moving in that direction where, you know, the 800,000 DACA recipients are probably going to be they're going to remain in this country, and they probably won't get deported.
The thing is, though, in this case, what Trump really wants is positive press attention. That's like what he's actually got. That's what his motivation here, and that's what he's
is
getting.
Is that what you think motivated?
That's a Hail Mary right there.
Yeah.
So, Susan, you think that's what motivated this? I mean, first of all, you know, the way it happened was interesting, right? Like, if he had a dinner Chinese food. They talked about all kinds of things. Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi were there. Others were there. Well, apparently 11 men and Nancy Pelosi. And this all kind of was negotiated over this dinner. So you think this is about press, or do you think this is signaling something to GOP leadership? I mean,
oh, and that too. I think that's part of it.
That's the other criticism, is that, you know, the Republican leadership has been so bad in the Senate and the House that Trump is now turning over to Democrats to get deals done. And that actually, you know, I went to the, because of Sunday, you know, on Saturday, I went to the mother of all rallies at the National Mall to report and actually talk with Trump supporters and kind of get their thoughts on what Trump's deal with Pelosi and Schumer on DACA really meant and what their thoughts were on it. A lot of them said,
did you see Juggalos?
I'm sorry?
Did you see Juggalos?
Did we miss that? We missed that rally.
Okay. So like the Trump rally started at like 11 a.m. and then the Juggalo march was at like 3 p.m. So there was a little bit of time for like Juggalos to appear at the Trump rally and go to the Juggalo march. I actually spoke, the very first person I spoke with was a Juggalo who actually did not have his makeup on, but he was a Trump supporter as well. And so what's, you
crossover.
Know, yeah, there's some crossover. So, you know, some people who are looking to do both, they got to do both, and they were so delighted.
Put your makeup on at lunch, you're good to go.
But, you know, the funny thing is that regardless of websites like Breitbart and my friends who are burning their MAGA hats, and Ann Coulter and Sean Hannity, a lot of them are still giving Trump the grade of like an 8 or 9 out of 10. Some of them are giving him an A+. You know, some of them have said they're disappointed, but they haven't really, their faith hasn't really been shaken by him doing these deals. So there's still, for most of them, they still have the faith. I interestingly also spoke with a Trump supporter who was born in Mexico City, and her father is an American citizen, and she lives in Mexico City. She came from Mexico City to D.C. for this rally, and I'm not going to lie,
she's a Mexican citizen.
Citizen, and she wanted every DACA recipient to get deported.
Why does she care?
You know, there could be so many motivations for that, but maybe it's because so many people from her home country are leaving for the United States that maybe their country is suffering. I don't know. But obviously Mexico isn't as well off as the United States right now. One thing I will say, though, is that I've never met a Mexican Trump supporter who is so in favor of getting rid of DACA. That's definitely a first for me. But yeah, you know, just getting back to the mother of all rallies, it wasn't really the mother of all rallies. For the National Mall, it was like maybe 1,000 people, not that big. They definitely couldn't fill the capacity. And it wasn't like Trump or Pence spoke at it, or any of their advisors, or any of the big names, a lot of like B and C listers. But yeah, with DACA, that is the one thing that I think is for Trump supporters, they're really hung up on, because despite this deal with Schumer and Pelosi, he wasn't able to like strike a deal with them on border funding. However, on Thursday, Paul Ryan got $2 billion passed in funding the border wall, just as like a big F you to Trump. He's like, of course. Yeah, because I think this deal really irked him and McConnell. It's not looking good. And I don't think in the 2018 midterms, are we going to see the type of casualties in the future elections like we're going to see in this upcoming midterm?
I mean, to be fair to them, to be fair to Ryan and McConnell, how could they have ever expected Trump to betray them?
Yeah, and just to clarify, by casualties, I mean Republican establishment members getting primaried by pro-Trump Republicans. That's what I meant. Yeah.
The whole Schumer and Trump thing is, it is kind of funny. And there was one quote, I forget where it was, but it was like during their meeting, during like the dinner they had, Trump was smiling so much at Schumer, it was almost uncomfortable.
At this point, do Democrats really want him impeached?
So for me, I'm not a Democrat, but still, for me, the threat that Trump poses is so great, I would happily take I would take Santorum if that's what it took to get rid of him.
Nancy Pelosi said that, you know, Schumer spoke New York to Trump. And so I'm wondering, so, you know, there's all this analysis being done about what really went down here. And I wonder if it must have been a combination of things. Was it an FU to GOP leadership? Was it that, hey, he just got together with this New York guy and it is all about people in relationship with Trump, and that's how he ends up flip-flopping so much? Or was it really about he didn't really believe all that shit he was saying about DACA? And because, you know, we knew he.
It was about ads. I'm sorry, about coverage.
Okay, there's that too.
Schumer said that Trump called him up and said, "Have you seen the news works? They're praising me all over." He was thrilled.
And apparently he forgot about his base because they all hate him now.
They're too small. There's not enough of them left to give him the kind of validation he craves.
He might get as low as 33% approval, and that will be like the iceberg.
You think 33 is the cutoff point?
I don't think that's a cutoff point, but that's like the low. I think that's the lowest he can go. I don't think he'll get below 33.
He can match Nixon, right?
25? What was Nixon's approval rating?
25, 26.
Oh, wow. I don't know. I don't think Nixon was that well liked to begin with. Trump, yeah, at least, true. Like, I think Trump at least has a lot of charisma that he can get him at least a third approval rating.
There was no cult of Nixon in that, was there? Like, kind of obsessive devotion?
I can't recall. I mean, I wasn't alive at the time, so.
Yeah, you're probably right, though. I don't think he'll hit Nixon levels, but I think 33 may not be the floor.
Well, I will say this, given how it was such a cornerstone of Trump's campaign. I mean, like, I really feel like anti-immigrant vitriol really drove a lot of his support. If he's not able to deliver on this, I think he might have high ratings still with its base, but I think it might end up hurting him if he is not able to deliver on these things. The border wall, I mean, like, his response to that was, oh, we've already got a fence and we're building some more stuff. And he also was kind of weak on, I mean, you know, when this news came out, he didn't really seem to back up that, you know, no, we're still building that wall.
They're doing repair of the fence. Yeah, they're doing their renovations right now. And that's... And of course, I think I saw one tweet from a peer who's also working in journalism, who's talking about I can't recall another time where I heard as much enthusiasm from an audience when Trump chanted those three words, repair the fence.
Isn't it now the talking point that the wall was just metaphorical?
It's the wall is in our hearts.
Yeah, the wall was the friends we made along the way.
Exactly. The wall is the friends we made along the way.
Yeah. People had a lot of fun with that. People had a lot of fun with that. Well, you know, I think this is interesting because I'm also wondering how this is going to impact like all kinds of other things, you know, like debt ceiling negotiations, tax reform, this new alliance. It'll be cool to see how it.
I'm sticking to my guns that Trump is going with the 3-month extension on the debt ceiling simply because he can get Republicans to come to the table in December and probably get something that he actually wants to get passed, but also make the congressional Republicans look horrible.
That sounds really strategic, though.
It is. You didn't join us the last podcast, but this is the long game that he's playing. He wants to get them out of office so that he get his own people in there.
Senator Kid Rock
Maybe
is coming, Susan.
I'm not giving enough credit. I remain skeptical that he's capable of that kind of long-term planning.
I think he is. I mean, if he talked about running for president in how many of his books?
Oh, he's been talking since like 1990.
Yeah. I mean, like, and then he went ahead and did it at the exact perfect time, and
that Putin was ready to help him.
Oh, come on.
All right, guys. So, thank you to our listeners this week, and thank you, Siraj and Susan. Hope you guys have a great week, and we'll be back in 7 days with more on the 45th. Thanks, guys. Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345. And you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.